Hey kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
What's standing between you and your first sale on Shopify? Time, expertise, resources? What if you could multiply all three? Product descriptions? Done. Store insights? Delivered. 2 a.m. customer questions? Handled instantly. Entrepreneurs on Shopify are reaching their first sale faster with AI that works with you. Go to shopify.com/firstsale to see how entrepreneurs use AI to grow their businesses faster. That's shopify.com/firstsale.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go. Fast to freedom.
Stars tonight together. Can't let me run this thing.
Welcome to Open the Voice Gate. This is a special Dragon Gate USA on location episode. I'm not going to do the whole spiel as usual. I'm Mike Spears. It's your old pal. We're joined alongside Caselo for our first ever in-person episode.
That's true. Like. Yeah. That's true, because we didn't do audio for any of the AEW weekends that we were hanging out at, so this is it.
Yeah. And we should have had a microphone in the car rides that we had. But
that's true. Yes, I enjoyed a different era of Mike Spears vaping and profusely looking for a parking spot at the Hoffman Estates now arena. It's a good time.
There's few times that I'm more frantic than I am in those very moments.
And I'm normally a frantic person. I remember I was like, we're good. Like, big parking lot. So we're going to find a spot. And we found a spot, and I think we enjoyed some wrestling that night. And I think it was the
Punk return.
Yeah. No, was it that? Was it the Bucks Lucha Brothers cage match? Either way, I'm sure we had fun.
It was the cage match, because I remember we were talking about in the car ride that at a certain point I was just going to turn towards you afterwards and just see.
And do the five, just hold up a five. And sure enough, that was indeed a match that I was happy to give 5 stars to. Very good, very good.
I just had to get there immediately so I could see QT Marshall versus No More BS Paul White.
I mean, come on now. I mean, that certainly existed at one era. And like I've said on the show before, I assumed the Factory would be the hottest act in AEW at some point. Boy, was I wrong. And No More BS Paul White did not help matters.
Man, I remember how much I loved Anthony Ogogo.
Anthony Ogogo. Well, look, the Freak Beast, Nick Camarado. The fact that he wasn't like a big star just blows my mind. Off of his look alone, forget the fact that he couldn't really work, but just a great look and a great name.
Yeah, no, what a time here. Speaking of eras, we saw the start of a new era last night at the Pearl Palms Resort as Dragon Gate USA Rebirth aired from the Pearl Theater.
Pearl Theater at Palms Resort.
Which was, I know that you and Rich got into it. It, as people that we've gone through all of DGUSA and seen the venues from the ECW Arena to the Congress Theater in Chicago to the Brooklyn Lyceum up in like this, did feel like the absolute best venue that Dragon Gate USA has ever been in for the last 17 years.
Yeah, you would think it would either be this or BB King's in New York City, but this is a really, really nice venue. And for those that haven't heard it, I did some audio with Rich last night on the flagship Patreon, $5 tier. But, you know, it's a really interesting venue to watch wrestling in, because if you're going to an arena, like when you just pack that many people into one place, there's a natural hum. There's always going to be some sort of side conversation happening, and that fills the room. Or if you're watching indie wrestling, you're normally dealing with the humming of the lights or an oscillating fan or a screaming child or something that fills the room. And I think what this crowd learned really quick, and I think it's something that the Dragon Gate USA show, with the amount of people that were there, this ended up not being a huge hindrance. I think some of the shows happening at that venue this weekend are going to be really tough, because if you're not making constant noise, it is uncomfortably quiet in that venue because it's a professional concert hall, and the acoustics are designed to dampen all unneeded extra sound, and that's not normally how things work in wrestling. So, you know, KZ versus Marcus Mathers was the first match on the show. Like, when it was quiet, it was really, really quiet and uncomfortable, and I feel like about halfway through the show, everybody realized, oh, if we're not actively chanting or yelling or booing at a moment's notice, then we're going to be sitting in silence like it's a library.
Yeah, and I would say that it kind of fittingly, when the audience really kicked up, was when Ultimo came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that there was a real change in tenor before on the three matches before that, and then starting with the Ultimo Trio going to the three-way tag in the main event. That was really when you got to see a really engaged crowd. And I guess what we should probably just our big picture thoughts about the show. Looked like it was, I would say, somewhere between 450 to 500 people at the Palms last night.
Yeah, I'm always terrible about estimating that, but you said that number and people around us went, yeah, probably, and so that's good enough for me.
Yeah, and it, at least for a show that started at 9 p.m. Pacific time on Wednesday, I have to view that as a bit of a win, just because, I mean, I've been here since Tuesday, and you have, like, the small trickle of wrestling, and then yesterday really felt like the first time that it felt like a wrestling weekend versus how things were. So, I mean, this really, those first two shows at the Pearl kind of kicking off the weekend and getting 500 on a Wednesday, I had to view it as a win.
Yeah, because they sold out the original venue they were going to be in, and then they moved to this Pearl Theater. And again, outside of spring break, I mean, that theater is a big theater.
Yeah,
and
they
so,
only opened basically the floor for last night.
Yes, and then there's a few people scattered throughout the balcony. But, like, I've kind of been on the fence about going to this DDT show, and then I look at the seating chart, and I think, like, oh, man, they have not sold as many tickets as Dragon Gate. That's going to be a tough, tough show in that environment. It's interesting, and I guess this is a larger point about whatever the future of Dragon Gate USA becomes, and the reliance on Game Changer, who remains the top dog on the indies. Like, this show benefited from being really the first show of the weekend, you know, a far more high profile show than the ID show. It benefited from being on a Wednesday, and it benefited from being attached to this Game Changer crowd, but 90% of the people there were not there for Dragon Gate. They were there for Ultimo Dragon and or just Game Changer wrestling vibes, and it continues to create this weird push and pull of, we're trying to give you the authentic Dragon Gate experience, but the people buying tickets, it's not that they're not interested. They don't know what the authentic Dragon Gate experience is, and so it creates every once in a while a pretty weird dynamic.
Yeah, and you would have, like, touches of the native dynamic happening. I mean, they had Dragon Storm play as an opening, and I think Caves and I both were kind of almost like idly, like, just because we're so used to, like, hearing that, we're, like, starting to, like, clap on chant with that, which is what would happen in Japan with, like, a native show.
Yes.
And I would say that, like you said, about 90%, maybe GCW, fans. The thing that kind of got me was that you could tell people that were there for Dragon Gate versus the GCW experience.
And I would argue there were more people there for Dragon Gate than I was expecting. I saw way more Dragon Gate merchandise on people, not for sale, unfortunately, but on people than I was expecting. You know, people with M3K towels, people with Natural Vibes towels.
That was the one that took me aback, was someone with an M3K towel.
You would certainly think that person's listening to this podcast. Maybe they're not, but a lot of...
But if they are, good merch choice.
Yes, well done. Job well done. Yeah. A lot of people in Zebrats merch, I noticed...
Shun. A lot of Shun.
Shun hawking merch. We'll talk about Shun's merch situation here in a minute, but... I noticed, like, there's a Japanese fan that I follow.
Oh, right, yeah.
This is somebody who is actually, like a masquerade super fan. She's somebody who is, like, all into all the people that were in masquerade still.
Right.
And she lives in Japan because she's at all the Kobe shows, and she was at this show last night. So it definitely, you know, I think if this show happened when West Coast Pro is happening, it would draw the same number of people that West Coast Pro is drawing, which is not much. But I think the vibe might have been like they would have been way more into the Dragon Gate aspect of things. But again, they benefited from this Game Changer partnership and when the show was. And so thus, you know, as I said last night with Rich, the levels of overness on the show were Ultimo Dragon at 1, the Stardom Girls at 2, Jimmy Lloyd at 3, and then the rest of the Dragon Gate talent at 4, which is unfortunate, but also...
a reality.
I would also think by the end of the show that at least some people in that crowd were going, okay, I should check in on this more. So
yeah, and I think one last thing about like the crowd dynamic and a little bit of like my overall kind of thing about this. We made a vacation out of this. Kings came with us to the show. It was our third professional wrestling show, and she was like talking, trying to like understand, get into it, and it really kind of took me to a conversation that we've had, Case, about people and their consumption as they get older, their media consumption, and how we've seen, especially within the last 5 years, this big embrace of 2000s culture and music in a way that just after it happened, just everyone was like, oh, yeah, no. Blink-182, that was the biggest band in the world for a couple of years. And then 20 years later, everyone's like, oh, I want to listen to the band that I loved in high school, Blink-182, when we were young.
Yeah, happening. and it's easier now because instead of three channels of how you could figure out something new, now there's 3 billion. And so at some point, I think people just gave up and went, I'm just going to stick with what I know. And
there's a little bit of that as it relates to Dragon Gate USA. We're talking about 19 years ago since 2006. We're talking 10 years since the end of Dragon Gate USA. I felt like the crowd, like age-wise and fandom-wise, that there was kind of a feeling a little bit from maybe not the GCW portion, but for a lot of people that were there, I would say probably more so around my age than yours.
Yes.
Just because of, oh, we got into Dragon Gate because of ROH six-man, and at least for people around my age, you were going to be high school or college at that point. So I wonder if there's a little bit of last night feeling like when we were young festival and like touching that as like, hey, this was the thing that was so important and big and valuable to us 20 years ago. We're getting a chance to kind of embrace that again. Is that what happened last night? Or are we going to see this actually as a true rebirth? And that was something that I kind of was thinking going into the showcase that I don't know if I had that answered, but even though it kind of was confirmed that there was this kind of generation thing that I kind of felt like there.
Well, in terms of, I'll answer that in two parts. In terms of the long-term viability of Dragon Gate USA, I feel like, you know, we'll use All In Texas as the example. You know, if they found a proper venue nearby in All In Texas, I think they could draw another 400, 500 fans. And if that's their goal, then I think they can pull it off. You know, I think same for All Out in Chicago. Now, again, you'd likely be in the suburbs and you'd likely be partnering with Game Changer again, and that's not something that sounds incredibly fun, but I think on these big weekends they could do that. In terms of the borderline nostalgic feel, look, 19 years later, everybody's still talking about the six man. And mm-hmm. you and I know from watching day in, day out Dragon Gate, it's not like the Open, the Triangle Gate belts are as prestigious as they were 19 years ago. But this is a crowd that still goes, Dragon Gate, six man, Dragon Kid, I know him.
Yamato. And,
yeah, maybe Yamato, as we discovered, maybe not Susumu so much. But, you know.
Yeah.
It's, look, that crowd, a lot of them probably did not know a single thing about Dragon Gate other than Blood Generation versus Doofixer, and this is the company that does the six-man tags. And even if modern-day Dragon Gate has largely shifted away from that atmosphere, it's still the thing that will always be their thing in the American market.
Right, and I think the funny thing, and we can just talk about the main event and use that as a way to get into the show itself, I think, though, like uniquely when we talk about 2006 and Blood Generation and Doofixer, there is the willingness of us to go like, oh, well, you know, this is the match of the style, but this was not the best example of it mm-hmm. for that. And people will say, cite Kobe World 2005. But I feel like with what Dragon Gate is in 2025, and at least keeping in mind that they're running shows this week, you're not getting 20 people over here. You got essentially 8, but really 10 as it worked out. Zebrats versus Paradox main event felt like what a Dragon Gate main event trios match is in 2025. And I thought that that really kind of accurately showed what the promotion brings to the table. And it was one of the most fun matches that I've been in person of in a long, long time.
It's the most fun I've ever had watching wrestling. I mean, it was my sensibilities. It was the fact that I was front row. Mm-hmm. And as I was talking with Rich about last night, you know, about halfway through the show, I realized like
we had work to do.
Well, yes, but it was more so I was like, it was me thinking, man, I'm a bad front row fan. Like, I'm not somebody who wants to chant. I'm not somebody who wants to get involved. Like, I obviously love a hot crowd, but mm-hmm. I'm not typically a part of that crowd. And you're right, for that main event, I mean, you know, very early on, you know, the baby faces, you know, Dragon Kid got a chant, Yamato got a chant, and nobody chanted for Susumu, and I was like, well, God, I got to say something for Susumu, and it seemed like
that kind of was the spark.
Yeah, that it was like, okay, we clearly have a chance here to make this match something, to elevate it into something else and in the room, mm-hmm. because, again, I haven't watched the stream yet, but I haven't heard anything good about the production quality of the stream from anybody that watched it. It's
right,
been
yeah.
unanimously negative. But in the room, the atmosphere turned into something else. And it's one of those things that, you know, to talk about the main event and the opener at the same time, like, it's unfortunate that Marcus Mathers is as talented as he is, because given the system that he's in now and the way that he's being trained and developed,
right.
Marcus Mathers will never be able to have that kind of match where it was so reliant on, I'm going to work not the hard cam, I'm going to work the front row, and I'm going to make people get invested in this match. And I feel like the most impressive thing about this match is, again, people knew Dragon Kid, they maybe knew Yamato, and they maybe knew Shun. Nobody knew Minoru, nobody knew Ishin, and Susumu, even for being a veteran, was not that over. But they all worked this match to the front row and then to the second row and then to general admission, and they went all over the building. Shun was on somebody's shoulders. You know, Coach Minoru was telling me to suck it. I don't believe this was on camera, but Shun grabbed Rich and I by the collar at some point because we were booing him.
Yeah.
And they made it an atmosphere that was worth investing in. And I think had they gone out there and done spot, trios match, work the hard cam, I don't think either of us would have left that show going, God, that was so cool. I'm so glad I was a part of that. They worked it for the room they were in, and I think that is that is a testament to the Dragon Gate style.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
they could have done all-star six-man tag, crazy spot. It wouldn't have felt as good as the match that they ended up having last night.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it also comes down to when you like look at the matchups that you have there, that for one of
I feel bad for anyone who's going to be wrestling in that ring over the next 4 days.
Oh, God. It's so bad.
I felt like I thought I saw someone break a plank in the semi-main event.
Yes. And you think about, because it happened right in front of us, but the spot where...
Oh, the Super Hurricanrana.
Yeah, the Super Hurricanrana. So Susumu is, you know, sitting on the top turnbuckle. Shun is on his shoulders. And then Dragon Kid does the springboard Ultra Hurricanrana. And, I mean... watching that spot get set up, like, I'm curious to go back and watch that match, mm-hmm. because there's a chance that that spot ends up looking pretty bad on camera. It might end up looking pretty slow, but it was
real fear.
It was all three men fighting off death simultaneously, where one guy leans in the wrong direction and they could have all gone toppling down. So the fact that they did that spot on that shitty ring is really quite incredible. But I can see one of that, you know, if you're watching on camera, and again, if you know, maybe they shoot it from the hard cam, it might just end up looking slow and cooperative. But in the moment, 5 feet away from them, it was as engaging as anything I saw, just because I was afraid they were all going to die.
Yeah, and I think that the mind goes to when you think about a Dragon Gate WrestleMania Trios match, the ring would not have allowed for a 2006 or 2008 or 2012 version of that kind of match. I mean, when Dragon Kid vaulted himself into the ring for his entrance, there was a part of me that's like, I hope that's not going to break now. I hope that it's not going to happen. But really, my big takeaway as someone that I've seen Dragon Kid live before, I've seen Yamato live before, I would have to go through the cards. I'm certain there's a chance that Susumu has been on one of the Dragon Gate USA cards or the Ring of Honor shows that I went to. Z-Bratz being able to, and a lot of this is people like easily falling into like, okay, face and heel and going with that. Just the willingness to basically just go play all out, just 1980s heels.
Yeah.
The entire was such a breath of refreshing air that I don't know if you are a parachuter, that you are going to have the same kind of takeaway, where I think there were both of us were like Shun just being a madman and being able to just command a crowd with maybe 50 people of the crowd who were familiar with him. And then by the end of the crowd in the match, it was midnight and there were some drunks in the crowd. So folks were doing his groans and his like chittering. But it was one of those like situations where going into this show, I was like, all right, Hyo in front of a United States crowd for the first time. Ishin in front of the United States crowd for the first time. I assume, of course, at this time, probably the most active one in America. But it's just a certain presence that I felt like in the room about the way that he was able to kind of work the crowd and see like, all right, we need to make this into a small room kind of match, and it ultimately was the right decision.
Anybody that listens often knows how I feel about Shun and how I really do feel like, you know, he's on that second tier of the greatest wrestlers in the world right now, where, you know, again, Ospreay is on another plane. Kyle Fletcher is approaching
ascending
Ospreay territory. Yeah. But otherwise, in terms of just being a complete act, I don't really think there's many people better than Shun. And in person last night, it only validated those feelings, where it was kind of everything that I was hoping it was going to be. Because I don't know, I was reading some comments this morning that was interesting, because it's a little bit of a shtick heavy match, but you and I weren't surprised by that because we watch Z-Bratz matches and this is kind of how they're formatted. You know, they're a very different trio than Blood Generation was.
I was surprised we didn't get a second crowd brawl.
I was too. But I think like the big finishing sequence, the big Dragon Gate finishing stretch, I think we got that.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, like
no,
I
there
I
was the
you
moment
know,
like setting up for everyone doing like it was right after Susumu did his first Jumbo Nakachi that you clearly, and anyone who've been experienced with the style, you felt the gear change.
Yes, because you know the Yamato Ishin stuff was on another level, and then you know Shun really brought it home, and it was the performance that I wanted. Again, like this was kind of the thing that I was harping on last night, was there's going to be a constant push and pull as long as they're doing stuff with Game Changer to where it doesn't feel like the authentic Dragon Gate experience. Mm-hmm. Rich and I talked about bellsound.mp3 and the fact that they didn't have a ring bell,
And, you know, one of the things that I noticed was they didn't have the music queued up right away. So you would go 1, 2, 3, and the rhythm of a wrestling show would be you would hear the bell or you would hear music right away, and you were getting none of that. And that sort of stuff was pretty distracting. There's just some things that, you know, if I was going to produce a Dragon Gate USA show, I would make sure that this, and this were different. But ultimately, the main event was everything that I wanted it to be, and for my money, it made the trip entirely worth it. You know, the Z-Brats experience there, Shun just being so captivating. Again, he got up on a fan's shoulders last night. I don't know how that happened, because it was on another side of the. I just look over and he's standing on somebody's shoulders. Ishin, who I think turned a lot of heads last night, was incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, Ishin gave the performance that I wasn't confident he could do, but I knew he had it in him and passed with flying colors. And even Minoru, once I mentioned that I yelled out to him that I wish Jason Lee was here instead, Coach Minoru, to quote Michael Jordan, The Last Dance, took that personally. And even, you know, Minoru by the end of it was playing into it. He was a pretty entertaining heel, you know, far more subdued than Ishin or Shun was. And I think they're an act that would actually benefit from him being at a 10 instead of at, you know, maybe a 6 or a 7 last night. But still, they all got there eventually. Mm-hmm. And it was just, it's a shame reading some of the early reviews out of this show that it doesn't seem like it was as much fun on camera as it was in the building. Because in the building, it was, I had the time of my life. Yeah. I really did. It was a blast.
Yeah, and it was a series of good feelings and matches that stretched like throughout the entire show. I would say the semi-main event, which was the three-way tag that I think we both openly had the most trepidation about because of subbing out Cole Radrick for Jimmy Lloyd, and just, I mean, it's GCW. I mean, like that's the one thing that we're going to deal with if this partnership continues in this way is if there's going to be a substitution, it's going to be, you know, the different boy showing up there, but
and I should note, I mean, Lloyd, you know, was a waste of space, but Alec Price had a good night.
Yeah, Price looked good.
He's got a horrible look. I would shave him immediately, but he had a really good night. He nailed two big dives, and as he was setting up for both of them, I thought that he might eat shit, but no, he had a really good night. I mean, this was
Kings was terrified. During that match.
They really by the end of the show, because like it's funny because there weren't many dives in the first three matches, and then Estrella was the first one to hit a dive, but he did it to the right of us.
Yeah.
And El Kukui did a dive to the right of us. But then the last two matches, it became dive central right in front of us, which was quite enjoyable. So this semi-main was Hyo and Benkei. Hyo's first time in America, or I guess first, he's on his first tour right now.
Right.
And then Willie Mack and Rich Swann, and then Jimmy Lloyd and Alec Price. And I don't know if you realize this, but I was telling this to Rich last night. It's funny that we all, I think, still collectively consider Rich Swann to be a Dragon Gate guy.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't wrestled there since 2013, which would predate Hyo and Benkei even being in the dojo. So this is like an entirely different Dragon Gate generation that Rich Swann is used to, which I thought was fun. And as somebody who, you know, there are points in Swann's career in which I felt like he's actually been incredibly underrated and is really like, you know, by the time that he got signed, let's say, it's like 2013, 2014.
Right.
There were very few guys in wrestling that I enjoyed more than Rich Swann. And for a variety of reasons, that quality hasn't been there over the last few years. But Swann looked fired up to be there.
Yeah.
And it made me really excited for his match with Yamato on Friday.
Yeah. So, like, the one bit of show-to-show storytelling really was between the main event and the semi-main. Rich Swann, I would say, if you're reincorporating DGUSA, having Rich Swann and Willie Mack available, it works in all quadrants.
Yes.
And especially, like, you have the entrance, which still is over as it was in 2013.
The all-night-long entrance, and with Willie Mack, it's only better.
Yeah. And leading that into, like, the post-match promo in the main event, setting up Yamato versus Swann, I feel like if they're going to have to eventually, if DGUSA becomes more of a habitual thing, They're going to curate a American side of the roster, and Swann should be and wrestle as someone who's gunning for the top foreigner slot already. And I think it makes all the sense in the world to go with him with this after last night.
You know, the thing that I liked about this show is outside of Marcus Mathers, because we'll leave him out of this because of his ID affiliation, and outside of Reese Maddox, who was just not ready. I mean, I didn't realize
he was 17.
So I didn't realize he's only been wrestling for like 8 months. So Rich and I pulled up his cage match, and there's only matches going back to August. So
they did not set him up to succeed, bless his heart.
No, but, yeah. You know, outside of those two, and Maddox, again, he's so young that it's like, all right, talk to me in a year, and we'll see what happens. But everyone else that was on this show... Kukui, I'm going to count Estrella.
Center and Saint,
and the other guy.
Rivers, yeah.
Yes, I apologize for not knowing his name because he was really good. Swan and Mac, and I'll be generous and throw in Alec Price, but not Jimmy Lloyd. I would put all of those guys on the next Dragon Gate USA show. You know, I really think the talent pool on this show was largely what it needed to be.
Yeah, and I mean, for a six-match show, you only really need 8 or 9 guys
yes.
with it, and you kind of have like your trio. Mac and Swan can work it both as singles but also as a tag, and really, I mean, Mathers you kind of have to put off to the side, but I not to get it completely away from ourselves here, I came away really impressed with Sovereign as a trio. Like that felt like a complete act and look in a way that you could just plug and play it. The three-way tag, we have to give him credit. I have been openly interested in how Hio was going to translate to an American audience. We've seen since 2023 how he has like tapped into charisma, and the font is just not turning off. And he, I mean, outside of Shun doing Shun stuff that gets people naturally into it, I would say out of everyone of the Dragon Gate roster, part of it's Hio's crowd work, but Hio probably came out with more fans going in, out of the show than coming into it, and I was really pleased to see that.
Hio had a spot last night where, and it's he does it in every match in Japan, but watching it in person.
The handsprings
yeah. were just a noticeable, like, and it's the same, like, KZ jumped out to me where I was like, God, he works so snug. Like, his offense looks so good.
Right.
But then Hio just going through his quick comeback sort of sprint spot, it's like, oh, man. There's not a lot of people in America that could do that spot the way that he just did it, and it was pretty noticeable. So seeing the Hio thing, which was great because he came out, and your wife had been prepped to have a dollar ready, and I had a dollar ready. We were ready to play
Hio
into, we were ready to play into the gimmick. We're to the right-hand side of the stage, and he goes to the left-hand side, and I think maybe one other person kind of knew what was up. And then I don't know how the guy in the Oakland Raiders gear or the Las Vegas Raiders gear, he had a credit card with him. And I don't know how he knew the gimmick because he did not know anything about Dragon Gate. I think maybe I don't know what his deal was. But anyway,
there were a couple people in the crowd that was wondering what their deal was.
Yes, to say the least. But you know, Hio got it. I think what happened is he got a dollar from one person. That guy saw it. He took out a credit card, and then he did the bit with Hio. Hio gave him a hug, and then he went back in the ring, and he looked over in our direction, and I started waving my dollar feverishly at Hio, like, no, like we know what the drill is. Like, come over here. And so he took the dollar from your wife, gave your wife a hug, took the dollar from me, I gave Hio a hug, and then by that point, people all saw what was happening and were into it, and so... That was great because he was ready to give up on it, and I really didn't want him to give up on it because I knew that
it would get over.
I knew that people, if they just knew what was going on, they would be into it. And then it just so happened that he had a pretty marvelous in-ring night. And you know, we're not at the Defy show that's happening as we're recording. He and Susumu are on that show. I'm gonna guess the Defy crowd is not hip to the Hio gimmick, but I'm curious to see that Friday night show now where he's in the main event, what sort of reaction he gets.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how that kind of pairs out with him with that. We got to see the principal. He no separados, but I think with this crowd, you probably doing the Raw or Nitro theme makes sense for
so,
it.
But it wasn't that because... First of all, I thought I heard the first few notes of Separados, and then it went away. So I don't know what happened. They just played like a generic rock song. But Rich and I pulled up his Nitro theme last night. And again, for lack of a better term, it's a little more oriental sounding than the rock music that he got last night. So I don't know what that song was.
Yeah, yeah. The Nitro, clearly a production theme for Asian.
Yeah. And the bamboo flute, the whole thing.
Right. I mean, that's just what the Universal Music Library provides to you. Kings was so excited about seeing Ultimo because
so was everybody. Everybody other than you and me. It's so funny. Ultimo is the least over in Dragon Gate than anywhere else he works. Like, he shows up to Noah, he's treated like a god. He goes to America, he's treated like a god. In Mexico, he's incredibly respected. His home promotion and the fans of that home promotion are the people that care about Ultimo the least.
And, I mean, we knew that this was going to be the case going into it. Not a single bump from Ultimo.
Zero.
Last night.
Zero.
What a worker, doing what all he needed to do. The closest we got to was the Mexican stretch.
Because he has to jump down on the ground. Yeah, he has to roll. But, you know, it was the perfect formula. It's the thing that I've always said. If Estrella is going to be stationed in North America, this should be Estrella's job, is to tag with Ultimo, take all the bumps, and then let Ultimo have all the shine. Between Estrella and Kikui, who I thought had a great night, I mean,
Kikui's the best.
This match in the building, I was into this. Bolton. Because Sinner and Saint, again, I'm not super familiar with them, but I thought they were great. I want to now watch way more of their work. They came away as people that really impressed me, and people that I'm not only interested in a possible Dragon Gate or Dragon Gate adjacent environment, but also I'm just interested in seeing more of their work because I really like them. But having Ultimo in this match, and then Kikui and Estrella having pretty on nights in the building, I thought this rocked. I thought this was a very fun match.
Yeah, and there's something fun about that trio, and it might be just because we've been watching so much Michinoku Pro lately that it feels right that you have your hero, you have his assistant, and then you have a big chunky guy with him. Like, it just feels right. And, yeah, I think that River, Senator, and Saint, especially considering where the indie wrestling pool is right now, really, I mean, the Pacific Northwest, I feel like, has always been one of those spheres that always usually had one or two people. But I think that act especially, I don't know necessarily if it, because I know they're Vancouver based versus Portland and Seattle for like the fire like that, but I feel like as like a regional like trio, like there's an opportunity to do a lot of really cool fun stuff with them.
Really like this. Yeah. And Kikui's the perfect guy to have on these USA shows. You know, I don't know what his value is in Japan, but I know for a Dragon Gate USA show, he's kind of the perfect undercard wrestler.
Right, yeah, yeah. I mean, we saw, like, we saw how much, like, Sauce Superboy brought in 1994, just, like, needing to have, like, a super energetic big guy who can fly a little bit. And it's just one of those ingredients you don't want to take out of the recipe. Ho-Ho Loon versus Reese Maddox. We kind of touched on Reese a little bit ago, Jason Ayer's son. It's nice to have that symmetry. And I just feel bad that, I mean, he's so, like,
new. He's so new.
I mean, his career is so early, and he's so early in it that I think it's great that he was there. I think it's great that there's the nice feeling of generations within Dragon Gate USA, but I just wonder if that was, like, not necessarily the best thing for him at this point in his career.
I liked the novelty of Ho-Ho working on top. We never really get to see him control a match.
Ho-Ho's music here versus doing the Kung Fu Masters thing was so much better. Like, that's the
That's
the, like, the one production thing I would say is, like, I like Ho-Ho's, like, actual theme. Why don't we use it in Japan at all ever?
Yeah, no, it was nice to see him work on top just because that never happens, and so that was a fun little wrinkle in this match.
Yeah, Stardom Tag, Neo Genesis, Izumi, and Starlight Kid versus Hate, Natsuko Tora, and Konami. When they did crowd brawling in this match, I was like, oh, I'm surprised that they didn't say... I guess it was like, go have your match and do it that way, because to me, I was like, oh, I don't think they're going to do any crawl brawling until the main event with that. So that was a little surprise. Each time I see Izumi, I get more impressed with like just how complete of a wrestler she is, given everything in her career and like how young she started.
Yeah, you know, I got to be honest, I don't know what I was expecting, but I was expecting more from this match. Now, granted, it was match two, maybe that's it, but I was taken aback because, again, we went from KZ in the opener into this, and the entire time I'm watching KZ, I'm going, God, look at the way that he works. He is just...
Look at that uppercut.
He's such... Everything he does looks so...
Fast and smooth.
Yeah, so painful. But then we came into this match, and I was like, man, I don't know. These strikes, they don't look like they're hurting anybody. Like, these girls are – I shouldn't say girls. That's demeaning. These women are working just, like, weirdly light, mm-hmm. and I'm not –
Well, you also had, like, Starlight completely taped up and barely working the match either.
The compliment that I will give them is that, and it's something that was echoed in the main event,
yeah.
you know, their, where their influences come from. It was very obvious as soon as they came out what everyone's deal was.
Right.
And I could follow the dynamics of this match quite easily. I just personally, I was not impressed by the in-ring work. I wanted to be blown away by this, but it seemed like they are the ones that kind of took the show off.
Yeah, yeah, which, I mean, they're guessing, and with that, I think that's totally... we have definitely seen Dragon Gate guys show up on other people's cards and do that before.
Yes. So,
I mean, no slight to that. And then the opener, and I would say outside of the main event, probably the match of the night, KZ versus Marcus Mathers.
It's funny. I'm seeing really wide-ranging opinions on this match.
Yeah.
I think I like the semi-main event tag a little bit more than this, but I thought this was really good. Look, Mathers can work. I mean, mm-hmm. Mathers is the type of guy that... I think the worst thing for him is being involved in the ID program because
he already has so many bad tendencies from that.
And it's like if it's confusing if you're Marcus Mathers listening to this because you're going, what do you mean? I'm working the hard camera. I'm doing all these things. And it's like, yeah, but that actually
does not work.
In our minds,
like
that makes you way less interesting. I think, unfortunately, he is just going to be developed in a way that is going to completely take his edge away and make him the least interesting wrestler that he can be because he is excellent and he can work this style and he can hang with these guys.
Yeah.
And again, just to, I'll say it for the third time, but seeing KZ in person, I only left with a greater appreciation of what he can do. And I'm really excited now to see him Friday in the main event six man, because I expect him in that environment to really go above and beyond.
Yeah. I feel like that even though Z-Bratz versus Paradox as a main event, we did get, like, what is 2025 Dragon Gate trios match there. I feel like more towards what people expect in their mind when they think about Dragon Gate Six Men is going to be the kind of babyface army versus Paradox.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I think, at the very least, that's going to be a much smaller crowd because I don't – I mean, they were hawking those Friday tickets pretty hard. I don't mm-hmm. get the impression things have moved great because it's head-to-head with Spring Break and also –
Spring Break already is the only show that I saw has over 1,000 tickets sold.
Yeah, it's head to head with Spring Break, and you could make an argument, and we'll see, you know, when we talk about it next week. But it doesn't seem like the depth on that Friday show is maybe the best. But the, you know, Yamato versus Swan, I'm into, and the main event, I'm incredibly excited about. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, look, I had a blast last night. You know, I would call this show overall an absolute win for Dragon Gate. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe not two thumbs up, but definitely one thumbs up. Because really, like, okay, if that Stardom tag is a little bit better and Ho-Ho versus Maddox is a little bit better, or even if Ho-Ho's just in the ring with somebody a little bit more experienced, we're talking about a show that A, flew by, and B,
2 hours, 15 minutes.
You know, the low point on this show was the Stardom match and the Ho-Ho match, again, because of the inexperience of who he was in the ring with. So I enjoyed myself the entire time. It's not a show that ever dragged. Again, in the building for the Ultimo match, it was super hot, and the main event I found to be absolutely outstanding. So I really loved my time.
Yeah, and for me, I can't remember the time that I had as much fun as at a show. Like, yeah, when I've gone to AEW shows, maybe seeing matches like we were talking about before we record, like the cage match between the Bucks and Lucha Brothers. Yeah, nope, that unequivocally better than anything else that we saw last night. But, man, if this is the product for Dragon Gate USA, I'm not anticipating that this is going to be, like, as much of a sea change promotion as Dragon Gate USA ended up being because of all the changes that it forced for 2014 onwards. But as a fan experience and as a product, I can't remember the last time I had as much fun at a show with that. 2 hours, 15 minutes, no intermission, zoomed by, really. And, I mean, when like, my real thing is, oh, the GCW trappings were kind of a little much at times, I have to call that an unqualified win for Dragon Gate.
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, again, Alec Price had a very good night. The GCW issues were completely related to the production
of the show and
the fact that we just happened to sit through Fat Fuck Jimmy Lloyd. But otherwise, you know, again, the talent was there. let's table this thought, partially mm-hmm. because Rich Kreich is outside waiting to give me my breakfast, but also
yeah, no,
we'll talk about this next week. But what I'm curious about is, it's funny the way, like, maybe I'm just detached from DDT too much, and I'm into DDT right now. I don't feel like when DDT comes to America, we have to look at it through the lens of how sustainable it is long term. Maybe I'm wrong. I just feel like when DDT guys come to America, it's like, oh, cool, DDT's here. But when Dragon Gate guys come to America, whether it's like Yamato and Shun working a Game Changer show or it's a Dragon Gate USA production, the conversation is immediately, well, what does this mean for the future? And I'm not sure that's the best way to look at it.
Yeah.
Like, this was a fun wrestling show, and if they do it in Dallas, good for them. And if they do it in Chicago, good for them. If they do it next year at Mania, awesome. But this wasn't like any... I don't know if we need to have this like reckoning of what this means for the U.S. independent show, for the U.S. independent scene. It was a fun show that's going to be way more fun than most of the shows that happened this weekend.
Yeah, and at least like the little bit of future, I would say, is they've done enough that when All Out time comes in Chicago and they're looking at this, I went from being like, oh yeah, I don't think I'm going to go to another All Out again, to, oh, is Dragon Gate running that weekend? Okay, I can see it like a plane flight with this. And we've already seen Dragon Gate's tickets very reasonable in comparison to the rest of the weekend.
Yeah.
It's really like opening an option, at least in the indie landscape, or at least a potential one. And that's really what I feel like is worth focusing on, is now you have something that, I mean, we could talk about my feelings about running a show in Dallas on a different time. I have more than enough thoughts about that. But at least this is a kind of thing that I feel like the scene needs. And it felt like a level of difference that you don't get to see in a lot of these fly-in weekends. And it's at least like write it until the wheels come off. It's a fun concept that it's worth going back to the well with again. And I think that's kind of what we should take away from last night.
Well said.
But that's going to do it for this update here in Vegas. There should be, we'll see how it all really comes together, but expect maybe another piece of audio coming in this feed later this week, and we'll be back on Tuesday talking about the show on Friday. I still have to go to the catch up Hakata before we record next. So
there's a Kobe show that'll happen on Saturday with Jason Lee and Luis Montag.
Yeah, that's right. They opened the Dream Gate number one contendership. But that's going to do it this time on Open the Voice Gate. Thanks for everyone stopping by on this special live in-person edition, and we'll be back with you soon.
And thank you to everybody who said hi to us at the show last night. That was flattering. That was greatly appreciated.
Yeah, it was real sweet. And if you're in town tomorrow, come out and hunt us down.
Please.
Yep. All right. Bye, everyone.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull, Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern. Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.